Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 96 of Weed All About It, or what I'm calling The Brave New World of Farming Comes to Farmington, about my conversation with Andrew Nelson, an unusual farmer hybrid with background that includes both agriculture and software development. A graduate of the University of Washington, Nelson received a degree in computer sciences and business. But his roots run deep in the soil of the Palouse, where he was raised as the son of Bruce and Carol Nelson, a family well known in farming circles, especially the pulse industry. After 5 years writing code and consulting in Seattle, while his wife, Kara, worked for a large accounting firm, the pair returned home 5 years ago. They have one son, with another on the way. I heard about Nelson when he hosted Mike Conaway, chair of the U.S. House Agriculture Committee, along with Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers. He wanted them to see and understand the technology that was coming to agriculture in the very near future, and hopefully help pave the way for its introduction, rather than throwing up regulations. One such regulation is the requirement that a drone must always be within line of sight of the operator, which makes it difficult to be efficient on farms of thousands of acres. Nelson, who is 34, is working with a Microsoft project called FarmBeats, which uses computer programs connected to sensors in fields and drones in the sky to extrapolate from a relatively small sample size a very accurate picture of what is happening across a wide swath of ground using artificial intelligence. Microsoft is paying for the equipment and technology because it wants to determine how best to improve agricultural production not only on Nelson's farm, but throughout the U.S. and the world. You'll hear Nelson talk ahead about his internet speed, which is a very important component of being able to get on what's referred to as the cloud. That refers to the software and services that run on the internet instead of your computer. Netflix, for instance, exists on the cloud. For the record, I live in Spokane and have a Comcast cable connection which costs me $40 a month and has a download speed of 20 megabits per second. As Nelson explains ahead, thanks to a system pioneered by a new company in the region, he has a download speed at his farm today of 15 megabytes, which is just adequate for his purposes. But in Seattle, he had a download speed of 100 megabytes that cost half of the $150 a month he's paying now. As you can see, high-speed internet continues to be a challenge in rural America, and it's one of the reasons that limits this podcast's audience. Nelson lives in a beautiful home about 6 miles outside of Farmington or about 60 miles south of Spokane. The day I visited, he had been coding in the morning and planned to spray weeds as soon as I left. There's a song that was popular in 1919, after the end of World War I, that had the lyric, "How you gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they've seen Perry?" I asked Nelson a variation of that question. After living in Seattle for 5 years, why did he come back to the farm?
Well, loaded question, but how I'll explain this is, I truly have a love for the rural area. I like where the closest house is at least half a mile away. And the other thing is, I don't see it as leaving a dream as coming home to a dream, where it's really, I try to mash up my agricultural love and my love for programming and software engineering, because I really like to integrate both of them together. So, I don't really see it as leaving something, as more as going back to something that I, really enjoy. There's definitely some parts that my wife and I miss from the city. There's, going out to eat wherever you want to pick. There's, you know, some good friends that we made over there that we definitely miss. But, you know, there's many things coming back here that we, you know, it's just kind of the benefits far outweigh those minor inconveniences in our mind. It doesn't hurt that traffic is not not an issue.
So while you were in Seattle, what did you miss most about the farm?
I think I miss most the getting out and using my hands, the working in the fields, the wide open spaces. You know, Seattle's a beautiful area, but it can feel a little claustrophobic after a while with all the trees around you and all the buildings, you know, kind of in on you. You don't really get to see, unless you drive somewhere to certain spots, you don't really get to see much for sunsets and stuff like that, huge vistas like you get in the Palouse area.
Things are tight in farming right now. It's not 2008 for sure. And I'm sure that you have friends in Seattle now, perhaps in computer engineering, who are hauling in the dough. And I'm not talking about the bread kind. How important is, you know, money to you?
I guess I'll answer that more with a story. So, you know, obviously money is important. Otherwise, you can't even farm. You can't, you know, live the life you want to live. But recently I was talking with somebody and they were, you know, I was explaining how I do software consulting and how I also farm. And they're like, well, you know, with your software consulting, you surely make more than you pay somebody, you know, per hour to farm, you know, to go out and drive a tractor or whatnot. So it makes most financial sense for you to keep doing your programming and then just pay somebody to do that. I said, well, yeah, but that's not the idea. The idea for me is being able to do both, because that's how I balance myself. So, you know, I guess it isn't all about the money. Farming definitely brings a much longer term thought plan in and thought process. And, you know, it's something where you got to be passionate about it, but there's also going to be years when I'm sure farming is better than my software work.
I read that you're working with Microsoft on testing sensors in the field and using drones. Tell me about that.
It's kind of funny because it was an interesting way that I started working with Microsoft. My dad has been on a board for Nature Conservancy, which is pretty funny if you actually know my dad. He has been on quite a few boards. Nature Conservancy is much more of an environmental type board, but they wanted somebody with another opinion on there. And so he's been on their board for a few years now. One of the board members is in Microsoft Research, not related to the Farm Beats project that I work with. But one of his colleagues said, hey, do you know any farmers? And he said, well, yeah, I know this guy, Bruce. And then when he talked to dad was like, well, that's more of Andrew's stuff. Just call Andrew. I have no idea what you're talking about. So they ended up calling me, and it's, you know, it's been a little while before we got things rolling, but we finally got stuff going, and we have a couple of sensors placed up right now. I'm completing my commercial drone license to also fly and map. And these sensors, they're just weather sensors, but at least in the Palouse area, we have some crazy microclimates that we deal with. And, you know, year to year, they can change quite a bit too. So that's what I'm hoping that we can find is, okay, this year, this is what the microclimate is for this field. And thus I will, okay, this field got a lot more rain than it usually does. I should probably put on a little more fertilizer. I have more available moisture to work with. Or this field doesn't have very much in the spring, well, maybe I should cut that back a little bit because there's not enough moisture to support, you know, a higher yielding crop. So that's one of the things that I'm hoping we can get from it, but I'm sure I annoy their researchers telling them all the different things I want to try out.
You mentioned the project Farm Beat. What is that?
Yeah, so that's just their name for it's kind of an over-encompassing name for the research project that they're doing at Microsoft. It incorporates things such as TV white spaces for, it's basically like a long-range Wi-Fi connection where you don't need line of sight. I have one set up on my shop right now. It uses what's called a Yagi antenna. You can use other ones, but Yagis usually have the best reception.
Of course, we all know what a Yagi is.
So it's basically an antenna that you point at something. It has a, it kind of is in a triangular shape, and it looks somewhat similar to, you know, TV antennas. And so that's part of it, this white spaces. It can connect sensors from far away that don't have to be line of sight. Another part of it is drones and mapping. They're also going to be doing a 3D map of the farm to then test simulations of automated drone flying. I'm wanting to try to write some code on that for being able to figure out GPS lines. The topographical maps that you get of the Plus sometimes aren't super helpful because it's like, okay, it's in every 20 or 50 feet, you know, their gradient level. Well, as you know, some hills in the Plus, yeah, it might only be a 40-foot hill, but it could be nearly straight up and down. And if you look at a map, it, you know, some of the maps that are out there right now, it won't show you that. So, you know, their map will get it down to, I think it's like an inch resolution. So that should be able to give me more than enough information that I need.
The kind of work you're talking about, however, I mean, it takes all kinds of computing power, and of course that also takes access to the cloud, i.e. a fast internet connection. As someone who does a podcast, I know that a lot of farmers can't access it easily because of a slow internet speed. What kind of connection do you have now, and what did you have in Seattle, and what about the cost?
Yeah, so in Seattle I was lucky. I lived within a mile of Microsoft. I'm pretty sure my speed was around 100 megabits down. Right now I'm at 15 megabits down, but it costs about twice as much also as I for the 15 versus 100 in Seattle. You know, I've been working with a guy who put up the tower, and I've been working with him since he started down in our area, Cascade Computing, and he's definitely... He's pretty much done more than any other internet service provider that I've talked with. You know, Comcast, it was just set up my internet. But with him, it's definitely been something, it's more of a process, but it's definitely, you know, I'm very optimistic that it'll be better and better into the future versus Comcast just seemed to be getting worse and worse when I left.
Mm-hmm. So it was almost like a partnership with this Cascade Computing.
Yeah. Yeah. He really has worked really well with a lot of the farmers and businesses in the area, and kind of understands that, you know, going into the future, pretty much all of us are going to need high speed connections. Now, the thing with some of the FarmBeats data, they're actually working on some ways to process a little bit in your house. You'd have a small computer in your house that processes some and then sends other things that are more complex up to the cloud. So things like that help as well, because they understand that not every farm has a really, you know, gigabit connection to the farm.
Yeah. So you mentioned drones and the sensors sort of together. Now, how will that be connected, and how are you going to utilize the drones?
Basically, they've done a study where they took three sensor locations in a field, and then they flew a drone over the field, and they were able to combine the data and extrapolate it using artificial intelligence to basically guess what the rest of the field was like. So you could even take three soil samples from this field, which I'll be doing in the spring on my, you know, winter wheat ground. And then I should be able to guess what the fertilizer or nitrogen levels are throughout the whole field. It was quite accurate when they did this. I forget the exact number, but I'm pretty sure it was above 90% accuracy over doing thousands of samples in the field. So you wouldn't need to be driving, you know, side by side down and back and forth across every field to get an accurate map. you can just have these three things out there, or you know, your agronomy company can come take three soil samples, or you can pull them yourself. And then, you know, as long as you know where in the field those are, you can combine it with the drone data and get some really rich information off of your field.
Amazing. So there's some kind of algorithm that comes up with this?
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. It's a big drawback to drones today that you have to have a line of sight. You have to be able to see these suckers all the time, even with a commercial license. And yet farms out here, I mean, they have grown enormously. Large farms are 8,000 to 10,000 acres now. Can drones under a line of sight limit be useful?
I think so. I definitely would like to not have that for ag purposes especially. But, but you know, we're kind of lucky in the Palouse area where we have a bunch of hills. So, you know, if you can find a tall hill, you can see your drone for pretty far. So that's kind of where I'm going to be testing this out. I cherry-picked my fields for the start to make things a little easier for myself, where I just have high vantage points at all these fields. So that way I can sit out this top of this, you know, dirt road or something, and I can see 500 acres from here. So,
and so you'll just be in your truck and you'll have your computer up there.
Yep. That's exactly what I'll be doing. I'll take the pickup out there, sit and watch the drone. I'll probably have my laptop up and, most likely be, you know, writing code while monitoring the drone as it's going, because all these are pre-programmed flight paths. So basically you set off your drone to map your field and you don't really have to do much to it because it's going on a pre-programmed course with a bunch of different information, you know, what the wind is like and how big of a field, what resolution it needs to be, and it'll fly the course for you and come back and land in the same spot it took off.
Now, is this one of those drones that looks like an airplane, or is it a drone with all of the rotors?
The one that I'll be using is a drone with all the rotors. I do like the airplane ones because they can cover more acres, but at the start, it's going to be one of the ones with all the rotors. They're just more prevalent, really, I think is kind of the main thing, and you can usually get a little better resolution out of them because it's, you know, you can control your height so much better.
What will the drones be looking at through? I mean, will it be infrared cameras or will it just be regular cameras? And how do you interpret that data, whatever they're looking at?
At the start, most of it's going to actually just be visual spectrum. There is a capability for infrared, but they actually can get quite a bit of information out of just the visual spectrum. We'll be using that at the start, and I'll even be using that for, you know, identifying certain weeds within the field. In wheat or in legume fields, you know, you can see where your broadleafs are. You can see, it's very easy to differentiate, you know, the broadleaf from the grass, stuff like that. And maybe a manual process this year. I'm hoping I can automate it some, but where then I can take that, put it in my sprayer, and then only spray the spots that have the broadleafs or the grasses. So, I mean, a lot of these sprays I do, you know, quite a few of them don't have residual. So if there's no plant there to kill, well, then I'm just wasting money on that spot of ground. So, you know, I'm just trying to find ways to, in the tighter farm economy, you got to try to find ways that you can to cut costs.
I've seen drones that cost $100. I've seen drones that cost $20,000. What kind of cost are we looking at?
You know, I think more in the $1,500 to $2,000 range. The $20,000 ones are awesome, but maybe not necessary at the start. The $100 ones, the cameras and stuff just aren't good enough to really tell you anything. You know, even they've come up with some new drones just the past year. And one of my friends has one and it has a great camera. And I think it's down to $1,200 now. And that was pretty much everything, you know, he would need to at least do basic visual mapping of a field. And it's pretty nice where it folds up quite compact now.
Today's tractors and combines are capable of providing all sorts of data, and that data belongs to you because it's your farm, but the software that makes it possible belongs to the equipment manufacturer, and they don't want you messing with it. How can you get the information you want without tripping over the equipment legalities?
We pretty much enhance almost every single piece of equipment that we have. You know, we end up putting on larger fans. We end up putting on extra harrows, changing how the harrow is, you know, moving the gangs on the cedars, stuff like that. And so with this, I just see sensors as, you know, another enhancement that I'm doing myself to it. You know, I wouldn't really be modifying or touching John Deere's. I'd just be adding more of my own. And their benefit is, you know, then I can move it to, if somebody helps me out for something, I can move it to their machine. And it could be John Deere, it could be Case, you know, whatever it is. And that's really where I'd like to see some of these things move to make it more independent. So your software and sensor choice shouldn't be tied 100% to your equipment choice. Now, some John Deere dealers may not like me saying that, but that's, you know, I kind of think in a software development principle of decoupling. Those two things shouldn't be tied together, because you could have somebody that makes a great tractor that runs well, is very strong, very reliable, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they write the best software or just, you know, the best software for your farm. I've looked at a lot of different ag software solutions, which I'm sure are great for certain types of farms that just, you know, would not work for mine.
As part of a trip that House Agriculture Committee Chairman Mike Conaway took to Eastern Washington last summer, you had the opportunity to show him what you're working on. Did you have a request for him and ask?
I wanted to make sure that him and Kathy McMorris Rogers, who was also here during that visit, got to see what we were doing and understood the difficulties that, you know, in my area that we've had to do to get through it. It took a long time to get the internet access that we have. And then there's other things such as a lot of the regulations, such as having to see your drone and stuff like that, that I just really wanted to make sure that they understood was, yes, it's good that we can use these, but there's still issues in overall rules around, you know, how we can use certain technologies. And I also brought up the same thing of putting sensors on our own equipment, stuff like that. Shouldn't have legislation, you know, stopping that. Because I think that all these things would hinder innovation instead of help. We need to make things as easy as possible with as little regulation as possible, so you can innovate without worrying about getting in trouble for just trying to, you know, try something new.
This is a question that comes out of ignorance, because I'm not a computer person, but all of the sensors and drone flights in the world aren't going to change the precipitation that falls on your farm, or how hot or how cold it gets, and whether a rust fungus decides to land on your field. When it comes right down to it, can technology improve your yield, or is it your bottom line you're looking at improving, or is it something else entirely? Efficiency, maybe.
I think it's a mixture of all. So, you know, definitely the bottom line's a easy one to see. Like, okay, I can put less chemical on this field. That's less input cost. There's other things like, well, I know what the precipitation has been, so then I can plan off of that. It won't tell you what the future precipitation is, or at least weather reports in our area are not very accurate, but you can at least have more information. I kind of feel like the more information, the better. And then there is definitely a big efficiency play, where if I have these sensors placed along my farm, I know when a storm system moves through while I'm in the field, I can say, okay, well, instead of going to this piece I was planning on going to, I'm going to go to another one. Even though it's going to take a little longer to move there, it only got a sprinkle, where this other spot, you know, got a quarter inch of rain, and I won't be able to work the ground without having to drive up, you know, take the time to drive up there to see it. You know, it may not seem like it takes that long, but hopping out of the tractor, hopping in the pickup, driving to a field, you know, checking the soil, driving back, you know, all that can add up to easily an hour or two of time, where that's a missed hour or two of time that you could be, you know, working a field somewhere else, which, Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's that big of an issue, but in springtime around here, that's a very big time loss. You know, if I'm losing an hour or two every day, that's pretty hard. You know, extends your seating by a whole nother day.
Now, are you thinking in terms of an incremental improvement, you know, 5 or 10%, or do you think that applying technology to agriculture in this way can increase your profits substantially, like 25 to 50%?
I'd like to think 25 to 50, but I think that I guess I'm a little pessimistic. I think that as I use less chemicals, chemicals will get more expensive. But my thought is, you know, incremental, especially in the first few years. And then hopefully, if I can get it dialed in, we can get a little bit larger gain. But unfortunately, we're price takers and on both sides of it with farming. You know, we don't get a set our input costs, and we don't get a set what we sell our product for. So trying to make myself as efficient as possible with everything is kind of my main goal. And I figure if I'm as efficient as I possibly can be, then I should be able to be making as much profit as possible.
Most people listening to this podcast know that the Palouse is one of the most variable pieces of agricultural real estate anywhere in the world. Given that the Midwest has hundreds of thousands of flat acres, I asked Nelson whether he thought it made more sense for Microsoft to test out its sensors and drone programs there. He had a simple answer. If you're going to try it, you might as well try it in the hardest spot, because if it works here, it'll work anywhere. Although Nelson believes that over time his bottom line could be improved significantly by using advanced technology, in the shorter term, he said he would be ecstatic if he could cut his farm's input costs by 2.5%. Other farmers would be equally joyful with such a result, but when I ask him if he thought about creating a business venture as part of the effort he's undertaking with Microsoft, he hesitated. As valuable as he thinks the technology is, time is a limiting factor. And as a husband, father, farmer, and computer programmer, well, he says yes way too often. On the other hand, he laughed. He never really says no to anything either. I hope you enjoyed episode 96 entitled "The Brave New World of Farming Comes to Farmington," about my conversation with Andrew Nelson. Please join me again next week for another episode of the Washington Grain Commission-sponsored podcast, Weed All About It!
You think we're simple, you think we're not right. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.